contrary to popular wishes, we haven't all been shipped off to the Gulf of Mexico armed with kitchen towels to try and mop up the oil flow, despite what the kitchen towel manufacturers say. Apparently it won't work that well. This is episode 10 of the Tux Made Up podcast. I am Paul Hudson.
I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Mike Saunders.
And I'm Red Adair.
And in this podcast, we are talking Fedora 13 is out.
Yay!
That was the crowd cheering. Google ditches Windows full-time for new employees. At the same time, we are reporting back on our You Dare Us as we use obscure distros out of DistroWatch. And finally, our hot seat. And we'll leave a surprise as to who it is, but you can probably guess.
It's
Don't forget our awesome subscriptions deal at tuxrail.com/subscribe. It's as awesome as ever. Please check it out and help keep us happy.
Right, let's get straight into the news then. And the big distro release of the last couple of weeks is, of course, Fedora 13. Interesting number. So this has actually been a pretty impressive release. It's not just another random assortment of little bits and bobs. I mean, they've actually chucked out FSpot for starters and replaced it with a program called Shotwell.
What is that? Management. Because of mono, or
I don't know why.
They never liked mono.
No,
they never did.
Tomboy as well. Have they not got rid of that?
Or it's Tomboy. I'm not sure.
Didn't that go previously?
Yeah, I think that did go previously.
Impressive Gino for the 12. Yeah.
Right.
So we should have seen it coming.
Right. So yeah, they're moving away from that. I did try Shotwell and it seemed very bare in comparison.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, FSpot's half decent.
FSpot is a good program.
Yeah. Thanks, lads.
It was a mature program, whereas Shotwell does seem quite babyish.
FSpot still like 0.4 or something?
I think it's one of those programs like
totally
every other one.
Yeah. Like Myth TV. Inkscape?
Inkscape 0.4x forever, yeah. Just get 1.0 out, guys.
No, because they're cool.
So they put Pino in, a microblogging client for Twitter and Identica. There's a new scanning utility. The Nuvo video driver for NVIDIA cards is in there now. And package kit integration has expanded, so beyond just the media players, beyond Totem and Rhythmbox. If for instance, you try and burn or rip an audio CD into MP3, then the program will come up and say, I need codecs X, Y, and Z. Presumably,
I also need to report you to your local government representative.
Depending on your location. Yeah. So then it will get the right GStreamer, ugly, horrible, evil package.
You're on your own, mate.
Yeah, exactly. So a network manager's been improved. There's a simple backup tool included called Deja Dupe. And Abbey Word is not included in the default live image. So us Abbey Word fans who would like its swiftness and
dropped from Ubuntu as well, Abbey Word has been.
Has it?
Thanks, Yoda.
Yoda loves Abbey Word.
But I also note that Kudzu has finally been deprecated. I remember seeing
Fedora 6. Oh, Red Hat 6, sorry, it's finally dead.
Yeah, it was around Red Hat.
Hardware detector.
6-7 times, wasn't it? Yeah, that program that we used to hang up for about 30 seconds on boot, you know.
No, my hardware hasn't changed as I restarted.
Have you got a new plug and play card?
Let's just check all those ports, shall we?
So yeah, I did run it for play around with it for a few days, and it looks like a pretty good, pretty solid release. No major problems with it.
Excellent.
On the part,
I think the major feature for Python programmers like me is that they've got Python 3 and 2.x working side by side.
How do you know which one to call?
Same as Debian, you say Python 3 or Python 2.6.
Oh, I see.
And also, the new version of GDB works with Python and C code at the same time, so you can jump to and from. So if you've got a Python module written in C and you've done some Python code and it goes wrong, you can step through them both in the same environment.
That's really good, isn't it?
It's clever. It's new in Fedora 13. They're pushing this first.
That's really good, because as I understand it, a lot of Python modules are written in C.
They are.
For speed reasons, so cool.
I mean, I've stuck with Fedora 12 on my desktop for the last 6 months, and I think it's great. And I was speaking to Nick Veach, and he said he upgraded his Fedora 12 to Fedora 13, the first upgrade he'd done on Fedora, and it worked. It might have taken all night, but he said it worked.
An in-place upgrade. Yeah, that's Nick Veach, the former editor of Linux Hornet.
If they could fix that simple thing, I would switch Fedora. With Ubuntu, I like it, but I like being able to say upgrade. I haven't done a fresh install in a long time. I just upgrade to the newest version, and it just works. And I wish Fedora had the same thing.
If I hadn't knackered my BIOS, I would install to Fedora as well.
All you've got is a BIOS to use now as your sole operating system. Moving on, Google has announced as part of a security effort, they're just going to ditch Windows throughout the yeah. whole company. We're talking over 10,000 workers here.
That seems really strange that they're still using Windows.
Well, I mean, I think they use Linux on just about everything server-facing.
Everything, like, important.
I would say briefly that they've got more than 20,000 employees.
Really?
They've got a lot of employees.
Is it 10,000 officially then and
20,000? 20,000 a while back. They're huge. Well, I think what they say is when you join the company, you can choose what you want, Windows, Mac, or Linux. So there's no company policy. Whatever you want, they'll give you. Whereas now they're saying Windows is an option.
It's now new hires are given the option of using Apple's Mac computers or PCs running the Linux operating system. And I imagine there'd be an interesting balance there because a lot of the people who are doing,
spreadsheets
of PR and things like that will go with Macs. But so many geeks join Google because they like the idea of working for a company where they can be geeks. I'm sure they'll all want Linux boxes as well. So
surely the cool people want a Mac running Linux.
Hey, yeah, or the other way around.
Well, they can have Linux. Linux is one of the options. They're out of Linux still.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, they've got those.
There must still be Windows people in there because they make Chrome for Windows. And Google Desktop.
Special dispensation.
They do. It's like remember ages ago, there's a photograph of some Mac boxes been taken into MS headquarters. Same thing here. They have to have somewhere.
I'd laugh if they're actually using React OS or something, just for that remaining Windows.
Or Wine. Do you know why they've done it?
It's security. It's security.
Was it anything
effort.
To do with the Chinese security breach? Or is there anything to do with that?
I don't know. They've just said a security effort at the moment, which, I mean, it's also good PR for them as well. And if they start to move some people on to Chrome OS and Android and the likes, then they're eating their own dog food as well. So
yeah,
I think the main thing, especially as us Linux fans, we can look at a company and says, look, this is a 10,000-person company, 20,000-person company, and they're operating entirely without Windows. So you can do it, whether you're a small company, big company.
I would love to see Google try and run all their stuff on Google Chrome OS because it looks lame.
Just a browser.
Good luck, lad. If you can do it, then I'll believe it's worthwhile having
a browser on a frame buffer on Linux kernel. Yeah. And finally, some news that isn't quite so happy, but is worth discussing nevertheless. According to IDC research announced just a few days ago, Windows is expanding its lead over Linux in the server market. So in the fourth quarter of 2009, Windows had 73.9% of the server market. And in the first quarter of 2010, that's gone up to 75.3%. So a couple of percent up there. And Linux has fallen from 21.2% to 20.8%. So, I mean, it is quite concerning because we know the struggles Linux has to get desktop acceptance and adoption because of the weight of Windows and the like, but on the server Linux is so strong.
It doesn't surprise me. I think it wasn't so long ago, 3 years ago, that Linux in the server space made an awful lot of noise. You know, whenever you trawled the internet, you couldn't avoid tedious articles on Linux and getting into this vertical market or that vertical market and servers and clouds and all this kind of stuff.
There hasn't been,
I haven't seen much of that recently. And maybe it's a sign of the recession as well. Maybe, you know, small companies use Linux, they grow into big companies like Twitter or something, and there aren't so many of those around at the moment.
I'd say there's two things to answer that. Firstly, a quote from Martin Mikos, who's the guy behind MySQL, one of them before they were bought up, of course. He said, anywhere there's lots of hype, there's no money. Because anywhere there's lots of money, people are too busy working, making money, than they are to sit and chat about it. But secondly, I'd say that if you were to look at Linux in the server market, yes, it's great for web stuff and database stuff, but what's the great exchange equivalent for Linux?
Yeah, that's true.
And that's been the case for a very long time. It hasn't really moved forward very much. There still isn't a credible open source alternative to exchange taking on the market,
right?
Which is disappointing, and it's been a long time. There are various attempts, like Open Group, were tried and failed.
Yeah,
but they haven't still managed to do it. So when you want desktop, it doesn't matter whether it's Macs with what do Macs use? Mail, I guess, mail.app, and or Windows with Outlook or whatever. I'm not sure. What does it connect to? Answer is Exchange,
right?
Which is a shame, and that's not going to change at this rate.
So you think a company looks and says, right, can we switch to Linux? Can we do X, Y, and Z jobs? If one of those is an Exchange replacement, they just say, well, let's scrap this whole idea.
You could probably say, oh, well, let's use this for mail and let's use this for contacts and this for diaries and da 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 da. Or we can say, let's just get Exchange.
Yeah.
It costs far more, but it's going to work.
Yeah, it's one big lump.
It's a shame. It shouldn't be like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, here's hoping some group will get behind a kind of
It's not a sexy project.
It isn't. It's not like Firefox or OpenOffice where they can easily market it and wrap it up in one bundle.
OpenOffice is sexy.
Oh, yeah. War, eh?
I'm going to use that in my next rap song of Tuxedo. Pressing ahead with the excitement behind Linux, let's move on to the You Dare Us section. This time, we dared ourselves cunningly. Based on someone else's dare, it was half... Okay, you half dare us, we half dare ourselves.
We run away.
We double dare. We chose to use a distro outside the top 100 of DistroWatch, which is where... I don't want to say it, but the dregs of Linux distros.
Here be dragons.
Potentially, but maybe you guys have found some gems. I certainly haven't. I'll say up front, I've been busy and I plan to use Minix.
Minix?
I downloaded Minix, the little happy little badger thing logo, and didn't get around to it. But then so I realised it wasn't even the Linux kernel.
This is the Unix-like operating system.
Yeah, from Tannenbaum.
It's
done properly.
Yeah. Is it 3.6 latest version? 3.something or other. And didn't do it, so I suck. But I think we have plans to write up something for the magazine about this, so I will use it. I'll make myself use it.
We'll find all about microkernels and stuff.
Yeah, you will. All about it. It's also important, microkernels. And,
well, you know where this will go. Kernels. Now you want to recreate, write your own version. Obviously. And have an argument with Tannenbaum.
Well, I do have the Minix book to follow.
Really? There we go. I think that was the lot older Minix, though, wasn't it? Minix 3 is quite powerful in comparison.
No, it's Minix. So. It's a new book.
Oh, the new book?
They updated it.
Really?
For the more powerful
Minix 3.
They actually print all the source code. Tangent. Let's talk to someone who actually used a new version of Linux for the last 2 weeks. Who would like to go first?
I think I put Minix on my Amiga, you know, back in the day.
That's pretty cool.
Tangent for tangent. That's impressive. Yes, well done, Graham.
Shall I go next?
You've now volunteered.
I started at the bottom of the DistroWatch list when you click on more details. So it started to try and find something useful that wasn't derived from Ubuntu or Fedora or wasn't simply a Japanese language add-on or a Turkish language. Or even some company add-ons or local education authorities. There's so many distributions, all with minor tweaks. It's a bit rubbish.
Yeah.
So I went up from about 315 to about 298 and found Paldo, which is the first original-looking distribution I thought was worthy of download. And it's not bad.
Well, what's it do? What's it?
Paldo. Start the basics.
Paldo. It's desktop pure adaptable Linux distribution. It's a little bit like Gentoo in that packages are unadulterated and pure, and they barely change a thing. But it's built around what they call the UPKG package manager.
Another package manager. Yeah. Which just
is
what we need.
Package managers. Why?
Which is itself written in Mono.
Wow.
So did you install Mono? No.
Mono. First thing. Mono. It's a live CD that installs to your hard drive. It all worked very nicely. And I got a very pure version of GNOME 2.3 along with OpenOffice. All very workable.
2.3?
Yeah.
2.30.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. perfectly usable desktop. The package manager itself was, to be honest, a little bit disappointing. I had kind of hopes that it was original and would be kind of cool. You can choose to download and compile source against all the other source packages. Or you can download binary versions if they exist. But the first thing that I tried downloading through UPKG was VLC, the VideoLAN media player. Mm. And it missed a dependency. It was missing HAL. So I had to still hunt around, find... It's got a command that will let you search for packages and see what's missing, the usual kind of stuff. So I installed HAL and VLC did work, and it was all right. It's not bad. In fact, for something that's 298 down on the list of distributions and relatively original, it works.
See, I would put HAL up there with PostgreSQL and independencies I don't really want for stuff.
Yeah.
Why does it need HAL? Why can't it just rely on GStream, which figures it out?
I don't know.
Thanks, guys.
But I don't know why there's a need for another desktop. The idea is, I think, that with Paldo you can create your own patches to source packages and create your own distribution locally. So make your own patches to the source code.
Paldandio.
What else is there to say about it? Nothing. It worked fine.
Are you going to use it now?
UPKG is all right. No. But it was all right. As an original distribution and not a derivative,
yeah,
it was pretty cool. And UPKG, pasting it on Mono, downloading source files and binary files, hopefully compiling them, it was quick. I don't know. No need for another package manager, even one based on Mono.
Well, I used the GNU Step Live CD. And actually, when I saw this down in position 254, I really, really wanted to use it because I used to be a big fan of Window Maker, fantastic window manager. And GNU Step is a free software re-implementation of NextStep and OpenStep, the operating system and a widget set and libraries that was created by Next Steve Jobs' company when he was booted out of Apple. So he went on and made Next.
Who?
Steve Jobs, that guy who's like Steve Ballmer, but not quite as cool.
Oh, yeah.
There's certainly an argument that there's too much desktop fragmentation on Linux at the moment, but I really like GNU Step. It's a very minimal kind of interface. As an example, this GNU Step Live CD includes lots of tools written using GNU Step. So you launch the text editor, what happens? Nothing. There's just a menu in the corner of the screen. No document appears, no nothing like that. Super minimal. And you have to navigate through the menu that's always there.
That sounds great.
That sounds rubbish to me. But Mark's grinning his head off.
Yeah. I just love the novelty of it. It's very, very fast, extremely fast. It's based on Debian. It includes a really obscure collection of software. There's like statistics analysis software in there as well, and the Erlang programming language and things like that. But it's a different approach to the desktop than the usual kind of taskbar-y panel, fiddly buttons everywhere. There's a dock, which is, of course, became the Mac OS X dock as well, but behaves quite different. So I really enjoyed it because it gave me memories of Window Maker, but also genuinely trying something new.
I would also add that the GNU Step Objective-C documentation is really, really good.
Is it really?
I use it all the time, yeah. It's better than Apple's own ones, amazingly enough.
Are you serious?
Seriously, absolutely serious.
When they went to open source recreate this OpenStep framework, they wrote their own documentation and you actually use it now.
Yeah, I use it now. It's really good.
Well, there we go then. Whatever happens to the GNU Step project, then it's obviously helped some people.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Are you going to stick with it, Mike?
I'm going to start using Window Maker again, I think. But that's me being, you know, pussying out of it.
And so XFC user base halves. Andrew, tell us.
Yeah, after listening to Graham go through the reasons why he didn't use just another language respin, I feel a bit lame. Because that's exactly what I did. I went for GNU Linux, which is...
Let's guess the language.
Go on, then.
Czech.
Esperanto.
That clicking language.
Moldovia.
That clicking language would be really cool, but actually it's a version of Debian created by the local government of Extremadura in Spain.
Sounds extreme.
So even though I don't speak Spanish, I can sort of, you can guess most things. You know, at the installation procedure, you just click on the defaults, as I do ordinary anyway. I don't know, what can I say? It's Debian, but in Spanish. It's really easy to use if you're used to Ubuntu. And all the icons and stuff are in the same place. So you don't even need to know that, you know, descargar is download. Like kids when they learn to read, when they look at the sign for McDonald's, they say, "Oh, that says McDonald's," but they're actually just recognizing the symbol.
Yeah,
I've been doing that, so I've picked up no Spanish while I've been using it. Which is what I thought it would be useful. You know, sitting next to the FA, I thought I'd be able to engage in conversations with our angry Mexican friend. But I think the coolest thing is that the menus were all in Spanish, but then, as you trickle down and filter down, it gets less and less Spanish and a bit more English. Partly that's because there are so many loan words, like desktop is escritorio, which I recognise from escritoire. And then internet is internet, which I imagine there's no Spanish word for internet, so they use ours.
Is it masculine or feminine?
I don't know. But as you go down, I don't know whether for example, tomboy plugins... It's just because they've not translated plugin, or because plugin is the Spanish word.
So what would Speedy say?
He'd say ondale, ondale. Oh, no, it's andale, isn't it? Yes. Anyway, and the other cool thing is that there's a sort of a GNOME or OS X style doc in which the developers have chosen what they think would be the most commonly used applications, and they've renamed them and re-iconed them. So GIMP in GNU Linux is called Zubaran.
Ah, That's a much better name.
Yeah.
I like it already. Yeah. I don't know what it means.
But it's named after that painter dude, Fernando de Zurbarán or Francisco. The bloke.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
He painted the defence of Cadiz. Is
this is what a blank look sounds like.
That monk as well.
That monk.
There's a really famous one of this Capuchin monk holding a skull. He used chiaroscuro. He was very like Caravaggio, the Spanish Caravaggio. Anyway,
that's the gimp.
Anyway, he's got an icon. It's a little face of Zurbarán. I don't know if it's accurate or not. And then in brackets underneath it says gimp. And then the one next to that is another, you know, dead European male, and you click on him, and that's Espronceda, and he apparently was a Spanish 19th century poet, but in brackets it doesn't say open office, it says procesador de textos. Hey. It's really cool.
It sounds actually much better than open office in games.
Yeah, really, really, really cool.
Well, see, it seems like obviously it's made for Estribadura, isn't it? So for kids, schools. And so they learn about poets and artists at the same time. Not gimps.
I'd never heard of Espronceda. And you go through the menus, and I'm actually really impressed by how much of it they've managed to get into Spanish. Like Synaptic, all the menus are in Spanish, all the file manager stuff in Spanish, and it's great.
And with such wonderful Spanish stereotypes, we come to the halfway point of our podcast. Still to come, we have the discovery of the fortnight / month. Our new section, temporarily, it's like Hot Topic, but slightly better. We're going to be discussing to you the impact of the iPad on the Linux tablet market as Google comes along with similar stuff with Android. And, of course, our In the Hot Seat section with a mystery guest, which is just really just Andrew, isn't it, really?
Bom, bom, bom.
Not a mystery.
Andres.
It's Discovery of the Week!
Yay! My favourite bit.
Ahora en Español.
In which we reveal the things we've discovered that we can remember. Two distinct circles on the Venn diagram. We've discovered lots. We can remember bits of it.
None.
And here's where it comes together. Mike, you've got a good memory, being young and all that.
I remember the day. They were great, they were. I've got two, actually.
Whoa!
The first, when I was looking around this for old distros, I came across Turbo Linux, which hasn't quite fallen down to 300 yet.
I remember that.
But
should do.
I think the last person to use it here was Andrew, who reviewed it for Linux Format magazine a good 3 or so years ago.
Well-known Chinese-based distro.
Oops.
Japanese.
I just find it's pretty cool that most of their releases, the code names are based on Formula One circuits. You've got Monza and Silverstone, Suzuka, Fuji, Magny-Cours. Yet for some reason, in the middle of this chain, they decided to name one of them, version 11S, Mususabi, which is a Japanese giant flying squirrel. For some reason, they broke this list of awesome F1 circuits for that. No idea.
Squirrel must have broken into the office one night. They renamed it.
In a fit of inspiration there. And the other discovery I've got is not remotely as interesting as that, but it might be useful for some people. This was part of the GNUSTEP Live CD, and it's actually part of the X Windows system, a program called XTR Lock. This is an X Windows system, a screen locking system, but it doesn't actually blank the screen. It just turns your mouse pointer into a padlock. So if you want to leave something going, something rendering, something displaying in the background, but you don't want people fiddling with your computer,
then
run this command.
Yeah.
Nobody can mess around, change anything on your screen, but they can still view what's going on while you go away and have a cup of tea. And by the time you come back,
you're
guaranteed that your box is intact. No foul play going on.
That's good. That sounds great.
XTR Lock. It's not installed by default in Ubuntu, but you can get it through Synaptic.
Yeah, and XTR Lock will be, as with other things, mentioned in the podcast notes.
Hooray!
Yes, those extensive podcast notes.
Those mythical extensive podcast notes.
Paul, what have you been discovering?
Well, having just signed out the magazine yesterday, I've discovered an awful lot of things through our writers. And I want to hint at two, because I'm not going to tell you what they are, really. I'll tell you one of them, perhaps. So you can go and buy the magazine. The next format, 134, is out 2 weeks or so. It's awesome, particularly good. two things, one of which you can check out yourself. One, our Dr. Brown section mentioned old.honeynet.org/scans, where you can download broken boxes that have been infiltrated by hackers and see examples of what the logs look like. So if you always wondered what it looks like if you've been broken into by hackers, you can download actual boxes that have happened.
A disk image of a box.
Yeah, images of boxes that have been hacked.
Booted up
I'm not sure. You get lots of scan logs, but you can sit and sleuth, you know. Because you always wondered, if I've been hacked, to know. You can go and find out what it looks like if you've been hacked.
That's cool.
And yeah, actually do a bit of detective work yourself, which is quite fun. Second thing, I want to hint at this because you should buy the magazine. We've got an interview with David Siegel, who is the one of the designers for Ubuntu, and he explains in the interview how to get started with Ubuntu Unity, the wizzy new interface from Ubuntu in the magazine. He did help design it. It's available to try now. Check out the magazine, you can find out. So two things I've actually discovered that aren't part of the magazine. Firstly, this is a curious one. This is sadly going to anger lots of people because it's for the iPhone, but it's open source. It's using Mono. It's called TweetStation from Miguel Diacaza. It's a frankly mental Twitter client, because whenever you refresh your tweets, it makes a chicken sound to remind you, no matter how much anger you get into Twitter arguments, it's just a joke. And also, as you type, it starts playing funny music, and if you stop typing, it gets quieter and quieter. So type some more to make it start playing the music again. It plays like some funky little weird music.
Miguel Diacaza is writing iPhone.
He's made it. He makes Mono Touch, which obviously works for the iPhone.
Yeah,
Mono for the iPhone, but he made this as a demo for everyone to have MIT licensed here, fiddle around with it, and so it's just a very silly iPhone app, but it's great fun. I love the fact he's taking some inspiration from just silly stuff and releasing it onto non-free platforms. The other thing, and this is really random, someone told me finally what you call the bits on the end of shoelaces.
The little
plastic or metal bits. They've got a name.
They have.
Wow.
They've got a name.
What?
Does it begin with G?
No.
I came across this ages ago as well, but I've totally forgotten.
The bit on the end of shoelaces that are called aglets.
Aglets?
There you go. That's the name for them. And it comes from French, aguilette, apparently. But we just call them aglets.
Now we know it in two languages
as well.
Yeah,
yeah. Forget Spanish. Very important thing. 5 minutes ago.
I wonder if I look on Wikipedia in GNU Linux if it'll tell me it in Spanish.
There you go. So that's my discoveries. Stocked to the gills with discovery
questions. When I read that that David Siegel interview, I emailed myself the bit about Unity, thinking that I'd try it out and use it as a discovery of the week.
Oh.
But forgot.
Good.
So I'm forced instead to make do with two discoveries, neither of which are related to Linux, unfortunately. My first one is how really hard it is to work whatever default music player there is in Windows Vista. It's just really hard. I couldn't work out. I was a little bit drunk, admittedly, but I just could not work out which buttons to click and where.
I'm surprised you got into the library at that time. Not.
Well, there you go. Right.
Whereas, Amarok's got a much cleaner, easier to
use. I don't care about Amarok, but Rhythmbox and iTunes. Click, drag, Spotify.
VLC.
Click on
VLC,
something.
Yeah.
VLC is dead easy.
Yeah.
Drag stuff into a playlist. Hooray, there we go. It's not hard. The other one is I was showing one of my many underlings here at Linux Format Towers at Tux Radar Towers. Something or other on their machine, and Firefox locked up completely on their screen. And Force Quit wouldn't work, and Apple Q Quit wouldn't work. So I took over and opened the terminal and looked in top to find out the process ID of Firefox, and then did kill it. I killed it with the kill command.
You're just an unstoppable killing machine, aren't you?
Felt ace.
Wow. Like,
yeah, step back. I know what I'm doing.
There was a big power cut.
So there, rudimentary Linux command line
there
knowledge.
There you go, processors.
That's amazing.
Keep out of the way of Andrew.
I can barely hear what you're saying over the sound of how awesome you are.
Well, mine is linked to something we were talking about yesterday, which is Safari 5 has this thing called Reader, which transforms a website with full of adverts and full of all the usual rubbish that websites do on big articles, transforms.
We don't do that.
No, we don't do that on purpose.
We're better than most of the web.
We're just better.
It transforms those websites into a very readable piece of text, like something you'd find in a book or a high-quality magazine without adverts. And Safari does a very good job of it, but it's based on an open-source project developed by someone called Arc90, and the discovery is that not only is there a Firefox add-on that does the same thing, there's also a Chrome extension called Readability Redux,
right?
Which stick that into Chrome, a little R appears in the toolbar, and so when you're reading one of those multi-page documents that's littered with all kinds of animated GIFs and flashes and all that kind of stuff, click on the R. It also gets the next few pages. It can guess which pages are coming next and turns it into this great big, really nicely rendered, beautiful anti-aliased font rendering of the document, so you can read it easily.
So there must be a bit of like AI going on here then. It must look through the DOM of the page and say, well, this looks like the, you know, there's a div here that says article or...
Yeah, well, unlike the Safari version, it doesn't tell you if it's a page that can be turned successfully into a nicely formatted page. If you try it, such as the main page on Slashdot, it'll say this looks like we can't really do much with this, you know, there's too many stories. But if you try it on one of the articles, it'll successfully do it. So you just have to click R and then go back if it doesn't work. Unlike the Safari version, which actually guesses whether it's good for formatting.
I mean, it's not a surprise that this kind of thing develops in the free software open source world, because there's all sorts of great stuff going on there. The fact it's got into Safari,
yeah,
where, you know, commercial company.
Well, most of it's open source, isn't it?
Yeah.
In WebKit.
Well, it is, but, you know, for them to implement a feature that could potentially take up...
It's a research project as well, I think. I think that's what
it's... They like the idea of killing off advertising, don't they? They're fighting against Google.
Kill all of the websites.
who make website ads, surprisingly enough.
Well, that's true.
Well, you still have to go to the page. So you do see the page before you click on the article. And
maybe it will encourage some sites then to not splinter articles over 15 pages.
That would be nice.
You know? That's really...
Advertising is fair enough on the internet for free content, but...
And maybe this isn't Pepsi I'm drinking, but unicorn juice.
Well, you know, probably like Adblock, only a minority of people will use it, so it won't make much difference.
Yeah.
But it's a nice addition. Nice for Chrome, it's quick.
Hooray!
Okay, it's time for the next section, which normally would be open ballot / closed ballot, but we're sliding that just to the side a little bit because we're going to return to the hot topic idea because we've just been too busy to think of anything else. And for this episode, very important release by Apple the last couple of weeks in the UK, their iPad. And we really want to ask ourselves how Linux can compete with the iPad, should it compete with the iPad, and what any of us think or could do about it. Has everyone tried the iPad?
Well, I've played around with it briefly, but the thing that strikes me the most is the complicated subject about freedom. People say, you know, Apple locks everything down.
So forget the beautiful design and the UI enhancements and all that kind of thing.
No,
it's very shiny.
It is very shiny. What I'm thinking is people say, oh, you know, Apple is super restrictive and blocks things, and they certainly are. They're very heavy-handed on it. But the one thing you can say about the iPad platform is you can give that to somebody and they can install any single program they want.
So you're saying that before design, before cost, before user interface, before flexibility, before aesthetics, before all of those things,
I'm not saying that's the most important thing.
No, what he's saying is that the walled garden approach from Apple means that all the apps are safe.
Right.
Yeah.
He can give an iPad to his mother, say, spend as much money as you like on apps. They will work on your iPad, guaranteed.
And if you don't understand, if you're lost, confused, anything, just press the one button at the bottom and you'll be back to square one. You can't say that about Synaptic or, I mean, Windows is a right horrible mess. Linux is a lot better. But you still can't say to your mum, you know, go and install anything from Synaptic because the machine would be hosed pretty
quickly. So you're saying before we go and hire a sweatshop in China, we have to sit down at a table and work out a single package manager with a semi-walled garden?
I just think it's something that we should always bear in mind here, where before we all go on to, you know, a big round about how Apple locks things down and closes things. Yeah, Apple can be pretty crap in places the way they behave, but it's not a case of, oh, we should have everything free for all. We all want personal freedoms, but we don't want the freedom to shoot one another in the head. So there's a limit.
I was thinking recently, because I made a binary of my Brain Party game for Mac, And they've got a very particular way of doing it. I was building a GCC before. Build, here's a final binary. But no one could run that because they don't want binaries. They want this thing called .app file, which is a Mac actually subdirectory containing the equivalent of DLL, shared object files. So I'd give them SDL, I'd give them whatever. And my binary inside that, and it loads those DLLs plus system DLLs and just runs. And I was wondering how iPhone works, because iPhone binaries are something like, you know, 50K, 100K, 200K, a meg, maybe the big ones. But there's none of this big bloat you get with other Apple apps. And the answer is because they have no shared libraries. They pull only the Apple libraries nearly all the time. So this idea they've got of private frameworks, public frameworks. If you use a public framework, which everyone's required to do, it's guaranteed to be there.
Right.
There's no sort of, oh, you need to install these dependencies. It's going to have them because you can only use them. There's nothing else it's going to have. It can't not have them because using the Apple frameworks, which is very interesting.
I'm surprised both of you have chosen to pick on software first.
I think software's key.
Yeah.
The hardware's lovely.
I'd rather have a pretty bulky device that ran a really great implementation of Linux that was swift and fast and user-friendly, and I could put up with it being thick. Then, you know, some super thin, razor-sharp device that ran, you know, the Linpus Linux Lite or some disaster.
But from what you've both said, I now feel depressed because I think it's...
You feel depressed?
I think it's impossible.
There's too much bagpuss as a child.
Well, firstly, right, Mike wants a semi-walled garden where packages... There's a single source of packages.
Yeah, it's doable. Canonical sets up an online app store.
And Paul wants a subset of strict APIs and dependencies so that we can all work with the same...
So you cannot install dependencies. They're not there. Either they work with the ones you've got,
right,
or you don't install them.
And that means version number dependencies as well. I mean, so we're going to have to... You have a single toolkit that you upgrade all at the same time, like OS 4 or whatever. So people, how are we going to do that?
Well, it works fine on the iPhone, doesn't it? It works fine on Android.
Right. So we need to convince someone to do this, or is somebody going to do this for us?
Well, with Qt 4.7, it doesn't break 4.6 apps or 4.5 apps or 4.4 apps. You can just upgrade the toolkit if you need to. If you really need to, you can change that, but the apps still work with the old toolkit.
Yeah, but, you know, Qt's on its own, isn't it? I mean,
but that's one example of a full ecosystem. You can drop a UI layer into it, you can do SAM with it, you can do web browsing with it, you can even do networking with Qt, all in one toolkit. And Qt is a great example of a stable working framework that's cross-platform. We could use that drop of a hat, make some beautiful UI for Qt designer, a creator, sorry.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah, that could be something that MeeGo actually has going for it.
Exactly. Well, yeah, but MeeGo's problem is they want to target a vast number of devices, and then into hardware land. So even when we get the software right...
That's what worries me, you see. It's the hardware. Mm-hmm. Because no one's going to be interested in a fat piece of hardware. The geeks will be. You know, it'd be great if it's an open platform and the things run great, but if it's a big, fat, ugly piece of HP slate, and it's running some hideous amalgam of WebOS and whatever front end it puts over it, no one's going to be interested when it sits next to, I mean, even Android.
I think so, yeah, but I think there's still be scope for it. If it was cheaper as well, I mean, you know, you could say the same thing, the Apple desktop mice, the iMacs, very slim compared to the device, and still a lot of people can't buy big, bulky Dells. Yeah. So the iPad is obviously king at the moment of tablets, but...
Yeah, people, I think, value price. And if you say it's big and bulky, but hey, it's £300 or $300, they're going to buy it. I mean, Android's apparently, in some parts of the world, maybe the US, sells more than iPhone. Not because Android's better or worse, but because you can get it free on phone contracts here, which is incredible.
Yes. Yeah. Do you think Android can compete with the iPad?
Well, it already is, isn't it? It's competing on iPhones.
Yeah.
Was it last week or last fortnight we reported that it's now on more phones in the US?
And the Samsung have announced a couple of devices, slate devices. But there's lots of slate devices coming.
All using the same architecture, actually.
Yeah.
Which is quite interesting.
That's probably a good thing. I think Android's got the potential to beat iPad in most things. And it's got most of what Mike and Paul are talking about in terms of it's got the market, which is semi-restrictive. Stuff is semi-tested and guaranteed to work. But whether it can capture the wow factor, I don't know.
That's one of the things that Apple did, which actually I wonder whether it's been their plan all along, was not to make apps available in the first version of the iPhone. So iPhone OS 1 that had no third-party apps, only from iPhone OS 2 onwards. As a result, everyone had to use an iPhone for a year using only Apple's tools, Apple's calendar, Apple's SMS program, whatever. So when they came to design their own apps, they were already massively inspired. They wanted things to work the Apple way. Whereas with if you just give them a Java virtual machine, say, hey, knock yourself out with the UI, you can end up with some pretty ugly stuff. And, you know, there are some very, very beautiful apps on the iPad. And I think because they've been looking at the pictures of Apple stuff where, for example, in the Notes application, it looks like you're on a desk with a leather thing and there's lined paper and pencil scribbles and stuff. It looks very natural. I think they're trying to copy that closely. I think that's actually maybe Apple's plan all along.
Maybe, although it's difficult to remember now, but at the time, we all thought they were insane for not allowing third parties to develop applications for it. And they were pretty resolute about that at the time. I mean, they made a complete U-turn after firstly admitting JavaScript apps or something like that.
Yeah, it was web apps.
Well, you wanted web apps. They wanted web apps. Well, the thing is, the Apple SDK, even from day one, was gigantic. They didn't turn that around overnight.
No.
All that documentation, all that code, all those frameworks, that wasn't just done in a few months, like they said. They were thinking about it from day one.
I think people love apps, and the only way you get a decent experience with apps and make them valuable is by offering the same platform across all of the devices. And it's just not going to happen. Linux is just too fragmented. There are too many manufacturers creating too many devices with different specifications.
But see, the thing with Linux, what I don't really understand is that... to get the new 000, you have to upgrade your distro because the new 00 is built against a new version of libc.
They've got a vested interest in that as well.
They kind of have, but with iPhone, it doesn't matter what version of libc you're running. The apps will work on your phone no matter which version it is, realistically. You know, with an Android tablet, it'd be very, very nice if they said, listen, it doesn't matter whether it's kernel 2.6.59. If it's any kernel, it'll be fixed for the next 5 years. Every app will work on that device. Fixed screen resolution, fixed amount of RAM, whatever. And that way it means there's compatibility against so many devices.
Well, surely the phone manufacturers will have it in their power to make that happen if they want.
But they aren't, are they? They're making very, very small changes. HTC alone have released, four different screen resolutions for Android devices, which is silly. Little phones. One's got 800 by 480, one's got 860 by 480. Tiny changes that make them incompatible for apps, basically. Apps to rewrite their stuff or suffer a black bar across the top because different number of pixels, which is silly. You shouldn't be having those changes. It means I will not write for Android while that's the case.
Yeah, and the manufacturers as well should try harder, I think, to keep people at the same version of Android. At the moment, you've got all sorts of different versions around. Dell has launched this Streak device, their little mid-type device. And it's Android 1.6, really old. And, you know, you can buy a phone, and if the manufacturer just can't be bothered anymore, then you'll be stuck with Android at a certain point. If there was a certain amount of responsibility, so at least we could guarantee that everybody using Android was using 2.x, that would be a start.
I was reading a great flash-up comment recently from an Android programmer who said he really hates it because half his code is from workarounds for devices. For example, on Samsung device X, right?
Yeah.
You only get hardware acceleration if the depth buffer in OpenGL doesn't exist.
No.
Whereas
no.
If it's a Droid 1, has to be 16-bit depth buffer or it won't work. No, otherwise, you get software acceleration.
That's
you shouldn't
terrible.
Have to be thinking about that.
Yeah, it puts people off, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't care what Samsung phone exists in the world. I mean, someone emailed me last week saying, can you make Brain Party work for my phone? I've never even heard of his phone. I've no idea what it is, what a CPU, what OS is, no idea. I don't really care. I want to target big devices like Linux or like Mac or like iPhone or whatever that are guaranteed fixed platforms that will work.
Yeah.
And Linux is good in that respect. It can be good, but Android's worse than average. Android makes things even worse by having multiple version numbers and multiple hardware variations.
Yeah, I guess at least with desktop Linux, you can guarantee you've got SDL pretty much.
And WebOS appears to be edging towards that. WebOS is more standard. They have got SDLs. So you've got a new version of WebOS. You get everything.
Right.
And I think they're better. Palm, I would say, sorry, HP Palm, are in a better position than Android to be standardized. So maybe this thing will work.
Not without any applications in their market.
That's the other problem. Android has applications galore, whereas Palm has hardly any applications.
And the other thing, I mean, we touched on it briefly. I think the other, even above and beyond all that, there's nothing we're talking about that's actually bettering the iPad, other than price. And other than possible people's freedoms and somebody can download a porn app for their Android, there's nothing we can say is definitely better about a Linux iPad. There's no real reason why someone would choose it over an Apple device.
Price is
there's no innovation.
Big reason.
So it's just then it becomes a cheap copy of an iPad.
Well, only in the sense that a Dell laptop is a cheap copy of a MacBook Pro.
But why can't we innovate?
Something that's 350 quid is a lot
Why can't
more
we add 12 sensors?
Yeah, so if they copied the iPad exactly and it was cheaper, that'd be great. We don't have to innovate. The iPad is very,
no,
very nice.
No, it'd be like one of those cheap Taiwanese iPhones.
Well, that's the problem, yeah. If it's not a good copy, it's bad. If it's a bad copy, it's terrible.
And I think the a Linux proper tablet competitor could make a big deal about some of the things that are restricted by Apple. Well, so things like emulators, you know.
Yes, it's one big deal, but what I'm talking about is something for people to get excited about.
SNES emulators excites me.
The huge silent majority of the market for phones aren't actually excited about their phones.
That is true.
So if it's cheaper, it's better.
Yeah.
But not to the extent that you'd make it in sweatshops, because that would be immoral.
Yes, and we couldn't afford to triple and quadruple their wages when it all hits the fan.
No way.
What I don't get about these sweatshops is why don't they just put air conditioning in? Problem solved.
We'll build them in a really cold country.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like Siberia.
This is probably Nokia's plan with Mego and QT and stuff. They know they're going to knock them out on Symbian phones that are very, very cheap to produce and people are quite happy. As long as it's vaguely good enough, they'll be happy. Doesn't that be awesome like the
Nokia
iPad?
Nokia is still by far the biggest mobile phone company.
They are, yeah, which is sad. but they don't have to innovate. You know, QT does some cool stuff, but they'll use none of it on the final product. You used Mega Wobino, didn't you, recently?
Yeah, there's nothing there. It's in the SDK. And what's even more worrying is that the Mego 1.0 for the N900 is just an SDK. There's absolutely nothing you could do. There's some mock-ups of the UI where they've basically copied and pasted sections of Moblin into the Mego 1.0 on the N900, and it's just a waste of time. It's good that they're getting together. That's what we're talking about. It's good that these companies get together and create a single platform, but it has to work to everybody's advantage.
But isn't that another problem of Linux, that there's so many standards? We've got Moblin now, Mimo now, Mego.
Yeah.
Fair enough, one standard. Then we've got Android, which is another standard. We've got WebOS, which is another standard. And recently, Linaro announced at the hardware / kernel side, they want to make sure the software all works nicely. There are so many things to choose from, and none of them are really working together very well. WebOS will never be compatible with Android at this rate. It's not going to happen. And that's not a great future, really. It's a hard sell. The budget cutbacks have been deeper than we expected. And we now have had to sell off our wheel to eBay. And in place, we have Mike Saunders, who will make some wheel-like sounds. And the end result is we will know the topic. And the board is full of great stuff still. Grub is still there. We are hopeful that we grub for poor old Andrew. We also have, what is that? We did GGK before. Take that one down.
Custard?
Oh, yeah. Let's put custard up there anyway.
Remonglaise.
He's
off.
All sorts of things. No, it's not really custard. Calm down. Shall we spin the mic?
Here we go.
Spin the mic. Whoa. There we go.
What's that, Mike? That sounded like you said gnome.
Gnome.
I thought you said gnome.
Gnome.
Okay, that means you have 1 minute to talk about the subject of GNOME, or should we call it GNOME? I don't really mind. Usual rules apply. Go for it.
Okay, GNOME is one of those acronyms. It stands for GNU Network Object Model Environment, which means really that it's a graphical layer that sits on top of your machine and gives you a nice funky way of interacting with stuff. Instead of typing a command, you click on a button and Zurbaran pops up, or GIMP, or whatever you want to call it. It's entirely free, and it always has been entirely free. It was built on the GTK toolkit, and it was built at a time when KDE used Qt as its primary graphical toolkit, and Qt was on a weird non-free license. So aim of being all beardy and sandal-wearing, Federico Mena and Miguel de Acasa made GNOME. And they did a really good job, because it's really easy to use, whereas KDE and other window desktops have loads and loads of configuration stuff. GNOME keeps it hidden away, so all you see is lovely graphical juiciness.
You win. Perfect.
That's 1 minute then. Well, it's very interesting that you thought that the GNOME stood for anything meaningful whatsoever. I've no idea what a networked object model environment actually means.
I thought it was GNU / GNOME.
I thought it meant nothing at all.
I think GNOME actually stands for GNOME's Not and an object model environment.
That sounds about right. I think it made sense when they had Bonobo, but they haven't got that anymore, have they? So
it was the other guy, Miguel de Casa and
Federico Mena.
Does anybody know what ever happened to Federico Mena?
He's still around.
Is he?
Yeah.
Respect.
Andrew has just pointed out that we have indeed not set a new challenge for ourselves in the you/us/dare/us
Dope.
Section.
Ook.
So here we go. We've just discussed the topic and we have decided to dare ourselves to write a haiku about free software or open source or Linux stuff and a limerick.
Haiku and a limerick.
Haiku and a limerick.
Okay.
In the next 2 weeks.
There was a young GNU network object model environment.
usual rules apply. I think you can waive the one about haikus having to end in some sort of nature-related thing. Just make a number of syllables roughly correct and make your limerick rhyme if possible. And with that, we come to the end of our podcast. Don't forget all the notes such as they are.
Achtung.
Glee.
Quick. We haven't got much time here, but you've still got about 30 seconds to prove your full-on geekiness. I want you to give me the middle names of these free software Linux celebrities. Let's start easily. Richard Stallman. What's his middle name?
Malcolm.
Robert.
Martin.
Matthew.
Correct, Paul. Linus Torvalds.
Benedict.
Correct. Eric Raymond.
Eric S. Raymond.
Yeah.
Sally.
Stephanie. You know he likes guns. He loves guns.
Stephen, correct.
It's too easy.
Three. And Mark Shuttleworth.
He's got a middle name.
Yeah, there we go.
Richie Rich.
Spaceman.
No, it's Paul.
Now, I'll actually have to give Paul half a point there because it's Richard, so...
That's close.
Yeah. Richie Rich.
That was close. I got them all correct.
If he's called Richie Rich by his friends, then...
That's it, I'm vindicated. You are not really geeks, yes. Quite frankly. And with that, we come to the real end of our podcast. Quite frankly, I am the best geek in the world. And you can read such other wonderful things on the website. Please write us your comments. We read them all and value them all. And we will see you in 2 weeks. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Bye.